Welcome to Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed, the only show that equips you with everything you need to know about restaurant transactions. In this show, we tell you all about how to make the sale or purchase of your restaurant not just possible, but successful. Now here are your hosts, ex-restaurateurs and seasoned brokers, Patrick Toda and Andy Mirabel.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Restaurant Dealmaking Exposed. This is our second episode, Sustainability. Did you say upcycle? I'm Andy Mirabel. I'm with my co-host, friend, and co-agent, Patrick Toda, and we have guests this time, so we're super excited. We have Chef David Murphy and Kayla Abe. I'm going to give you a little background on them, and then we're going to dive into asking them questions and letting them talk about their causes and their background and every other question we have to throw at them. So Kayla Abe is devoted to environmental causes surrounding sustainability, awareness, and implementation. She is an informed and passionate speaker regarding her cause, speaking on platforms such as NPR and Rewired, as well as the successful entrepreneur. Chef David Murphy is a nationally recognized chef, especially loved in his Bay Area by his Bay Area customers and fans. He's a wildly colorful personality, accented by his amazing and loud style. And I didn't have to ask because he's on camera with us right now. He is wearing a cowboy hat. He has honed his high-level chefing skills to team up with Kayla and focus on upcycling foods in their SF Mission District brick-and-mortar, Shuggie's Trash Pie and Natural Wine, as well as their other business, The Ugly Pickle Company. So I want to dive into a little background with you guys so our listeners can learn more about you, hear about you, and go from there. So just in a nutshell, would you guys please let us know, you know, where you're from and how you got here?
Yeah, well, thanks guys for having us on. We're pumped to be here. I'm from San Francisco, born and raised, and left for a bit for various things, for school, for just being abroad for a little while. But yeah, my family's roots go back really far here. I'm fourth generation living in the Bay Area. Have a lot of family on my dad's side that is from the Salinas Valley, so grew up in like a farm community, and I'm kind of the first one to not grow up on the farm. So of course I thought that I came into food stuff myself, and really it was definitely part of just the lineage and the family background. But I've always been, you know, I've really been in the environmental sector my whole career, and I've been thinking about really how can we affect climate change in our lifetime before we do irreversible damage, which is coming up in the next 6 years. So I always, you know, first and foremost had a love of sustainability, and then really came into food as one of the really key environmental levers. So started learning more about food systems, have worked with Quesa, formerly Quesa, that's now called Foodwise, which is the operator of the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market, and really got to understand farming and farmers from their firsthand perspective working at the market, and then kept kind of coming back to this issue of food waste amongst all of the many things that they struggle with. So after having gone through the laborious struggle of actually growing all of this food and harvesting and bringing it to market, they deal with food waste at the end of that just because something looks cosmetically irregular, or they maybe have a bump in harvest, or, you know, all of the many reasons that food goes to waste. So yeah, that kept coming up, and kind of around that same time we met, and he was also having these same conversations, I realized, with the exact same people. So
wow.
You joined in there.
That's amazing. I like you say cosmetically irregular. And by that, you mean food that is quote unquote ugly, but sure yeah. Tastes great still.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And it truly is just, I mean, there's a lot of different types of cosmetic imperfection, you know, and we can dive into that later, but it's truly just us not being used to natural looking food. It's all just, you know, we have very uniform things that go into the grocery stores that we use for manufacturing, and we're just not used to, you know, what natural farming looks like.
On a different note, you say you're from San Francisco, born and raised, and my daughter was born there. So it's a rarity. Yeah. It's a rarity. I meet everybody that lives in San Francisco is not from San Francisco. Do you get that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. It's really sad. I mean, yeah. I think now I'm at the point in my life where the people that I grew up with are finally coming back. So
good.
There's a mini renaissance, I think.
Right on. Nice. All right, Chef David, what about you? You can't be from San Francisco with that hat.
No, I'm not from San Francisco. I'm from Austin, Texas, and Houston, Texas, a little combination of both.
Makes sense.
Also, episode 2. Congratulations, babies. That's amazing. That's
really thank you. Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. We're super stoked. And kind of picking up where Kayla left off, you know, she's always dedicated her career to environmentalism and geography and agriculture and all these things. And then she got stuck with this guy. And we, you know, I've been cooking for 22 years, did Michelin restaurants and James Beard restaurants, did all that stuff. I had a career for quite a length of time here in the Bay. I've been here off and on, moved away, come back for about 17, 18 years. And this last time I came back, I knew that I wanted to stay. I moved back to Austin, back home to Austin with Sous Chef at Uchi and all that stuff. And then went and opened up a restaurant out in Pittsburgh. And I've done lots of openings. And I think once you get to a point where you've done so many openings, you kind of have all the ins and outs of what you see, like the beginning stages of construction. You know what inspection process looks like, especially on the health side. And little did I know I was going to be doing absolutely every single inspection. We'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah, we have questions for you on that for sure.
I'm sure you got all those questions. We, just to preface it all, we had an amazing ride building Shuggies. I say amazing, amazingly difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't end with the word amazing.
Yeah.
I saw that place before you guys took it over when it was a Velvet Cantina. So yeah. I had a little bit of knowledge as to what kind of upgrades you might have had to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was a rough one. but Kayla and I met through Quesa or Food White, formerly known as Quesa. I was chef over at Whitechapel, opening chef there, and we were doing one of their cocktail events, and I was doing food for that cocktail event and saw this one. Some of my colleagues went in for, you know, like little European kiss, and I was like, oh, I need to get one of those. So we ended up meeting about 2 weeks later at the farmer's market, and she was doing interviews with chefs. She had just done one with my old chef previously. And so I just happened to be kind of in the same vicinity, and she...
You couldn't have written a better story given what you guys do then, I guess, right?
The rest is history. And so, I mean, what Kayla was talking about when you're talking about, we kind of came to this in the same way. We were both talking to the same farmers. We were talking to the same people, the same farmer's market. And they're all, you know, these are people that are literally, you know, breaking their backs, still 60, almost 70 years old.
Yeah, sure.
Over pulling and harvesting. So
it struck me when Kayla said that, I mean, you really look like this junction between where you grew up and what you knew and farming and all your stuff, you know, what you grew up doing with your family and generations of that. And then now what you do now, it seems natural, but we need that conduit to really get this out to urban populations and the folks that are living in these cities that maybe don't think about this every day.
And talk to these people. It feels like just another statistic that, you know, farmers are struggling, they're dealing with all these things, they have financial troubles, but then you meet them and then you're buying produce from them every week, and it's like, oh my God, why is this happening? Like, we're all here, we're showing up in the market, we're like trying to do good by buying from you directly, but there's such a larger systemic issue that, like, I don't know, maybe we can do something about. And then
Very admirable what you do. We really stand behind you. You know, I had a restaurant not too far away from you for, you know, 11 years in San Francisco called School. And that was my introduction to sustainability. I, you know, did the business model based on a lot of key restaurants in Monterey and other things there that really started this fish sustainability movement. And I really thought, great, this is something I want to stand behind and do it. But when you peel back the layers, there's just so much more that we're not doing. I mean, and you guys are pioneers because you just really put the stamp on it with your concept. And God, that sounds so damn risky because maybe you don't appeal to the masses, and you sure have. People love you. It's fun when you go in there. It's lively. It's loud. And just everything about it, you know, it just touches all your senses. So I commend what you did.
I'm going to throw myself under the bus. When I had my breakfast restaurant in Delhi, one of the reasons why I got out of it was because in that concept, I couldn't afford to buy like organic food and the food I eat at home. And I started to become kind of not in line with my values at home with my business. And I was like, I need to get out of this because I don't want to serve my customers this kind of food. So I'm like the exact opposite of that. So I do applaud what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So thanks for a little background on both of you. That's really sweet. Kayla, I really think that David maybe had figured out you were going to be at the farmer's market that day and shadily been there. Yeah, like, you know.
I would be there, maybe. I'd probably be more like it.
I'm setting the record straight, finally.
Yeah.
We're not going to go into all the other details of my case next. So
did you get that kiss on each cheek that day? I want to know.
Okay. So we're going to tell this real fast.
All right, good. Do it. Get awesome. In there.
It was my first day off since we opened the restaurant. And I'm talking about 4 or 5 months in. And I made Kayla like basically wait for our date. She actually came into my restaurant. She grabbed me, like, oh, what's going on? Who's this? Fast forward to our first date. I go in for that European kiss that we were talking about. I go in. She doesn't know what's going on. She thinks I'm going full frontal. And then we end up making out for the first 15 seconds of our date. And it was the easiest date I've ever been on.
That's a win. That's a win through and through.
And we've been together for almost 9 years now. So I encourage everybody out there in podcast land to go in for the French, you know.
Right on. Big applause. I love that. Go after
congratulations. What you want right away.
Full circle, baby. Boom.
Kayla, thank you for not making us men like, you know, regret going in for that kiss. It sounds like it worked out in your guys' circumstance. I like that. I have probably 7 or 8 other stories that didn't work out that way. So,
okay. So and before we get into more on the sustainability, can you guys both elaborate a little bit on your mission location? You know, how did you find it? Who did you work with? Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got there.
The process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very long road finding the place that we have right now. And I think the first thing that even pushed us into thinking about a brick and mortar was this one specific location that we had done pop-ups in before, went onto the market. And when that was available, we finally like came to the realization like, oh, we could actually maybe roll this into a real place and this could be our new thing. Because at that time we had our pickle company with the same mission, using upcycled ingredients that we now have laid to rest and really kind of rolled that into the restaurant. It's scaled it up into what it is now, but with Shuggies. But back then we had this one location. We're like, all right, maybe this is the one. We kind of formatted our entire business model around this one location, and then it didn't work out.
Thank God.
I mean, there was so much we didn't know at that point. It was a very tiny location. We would have been tied to it day and night. It would have been really hard to have employees to make it viable. But from there, we started looking into other locations. We met with Patrick, who helped us look at a lot of really great spots. Some that were probably too nice for us. So we were like, we're trying to, you know, scrap this together. And I mean, we probably looked at 40 different places.
Wow. That many, huh?
Yeah.
We looked at a lot.
So why this location?
This location for us, I mean, it felt just like after the birth of places that we'd seen, it was like the last like kind of unicorn deal and the mission. Our was killer. The relationship immediately with the landlord was really positive.
Which is key, as we will repeat over and over again.
Absolutely key.
Was the prior owner out of the deal at this point? Like Matt wasn't there?
Matt was not there, and we really wanted Matt's liquor license.
I know.
but he had already sold it off to somebody else in the mission. And in the mission, for all the listeners that are kicking around, it is very difficult to get liquor licenses just from, you know, straight from the government. You have to go buy third parties and all that stuff.
And I don't think a lot of our listeners outside of the Bay Area would ever think that liquor licenses, and when we say liquor license, a full bar type 47, that we're talking ranging, you know, in the ballpark of $250,000 at some of its peaks. So it is a huge investment. A lot of people find it very worth it. And it's a very difficult process to go through the transfer district to district location. It's tough. So I'm glad you guys got it.
Yeah. We actually never did. We've got a beer one. Yeah. We are still like, should we do it? Yeah. We've had so many people offering us licenses lately. I'm like, should we just buy one? I'm not sure. But
I was working with Matt prior to the pandemic, you know, provided him some, you know, appraisal and evaluation. And he was dead set on trying to sell the license separate with the business. And I told him I wanted to sell them together because having that license in place is going to, you know, that's what's going to help sell that place, you know, given the condition of what it was and everything. So he was dead set on selling that thing off. I don't know why.
Yeah. And I think he would have derived more value if he would have held them together because we ended up paying zero key money. it was just a new lease. We absorbed.
Sure.
We could have absorbed like 2 months of his lease or something. I can't remember what it was. No, I can't remember the details now. But yeah, we paid zero key money. We moved in and we got TI in the form of free rent and all that stuff. And we originally thought, I don't know how deep you want to get into construction right now, but our construction process, you know, we weren't going to open up any walls. We weren't going to touch any pipes. It was just going to be like, this is what this is. We're leaving it how it is.
Sure.
We're just going to slap a fresh coat of paint and start cranking away. Oh, dear babies out there in podcast land, don't ever think that's
going to... Womp, 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 right? It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way.
I don't care. I don't care who you are. I don't care how naive you are. Always raise 2 to 3 times as much money as you think you're going to need. And do not ever think that you're just going to slap a fresh coat of paint on something and call it a day.
Good advice.
What was the biggest surprise of the whole thing?
Biggest surprise of the, I mean, okay, we'll call it two. We ended up having to replace every single inch of plumbing in the place.
Wow.
Unfortunately, we got bagged with 2 bum contractors. One, the initial one was, he ended up stealing a bunch of money from us.
Wow.
But just because we're too trusting. Don't trust anyone out there in podcast land. I don't care how sweet and kind they are. I don't care if you've had drinks with them after the initial couple weeks or couple days of that stuff. That's probably even a bad sign too, you know.
On a sidebar, please trust Andy and Patrick because we're trying to do our best to give you good info.
We're not contractors.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. We also were just trying to do this on, you know, a shoestring. And we realized very quickly, hey, you know, that's not going to be it. So then we end up fundraising and getting investors.
Still a very scary prospect because we were bringing people into our space when there was earth exposed. We had giant piles of dirt and like pipes that were not in place. And we're like, all right,
jeez,
this will be a bathroom and this will be the dining room. And they were like, okay, I see it. And
yeah. Well, you both are very charismatic and you have great backgrounds. I'd be remiss to say that I'm sure they all wholeheartedly believed in you, and that's why they're on board. I mean, that's fantastic. Yeah. You know, you brought up the bar thing, and your space has such a bar vibe in the back room, which is fantastic. And for you to get that done with a beer and wine license is amazing. And I just like naively thought maybe you did have the bar license, because every time I've gone in there, I've enjoyed some of your very unique and wonderful natural wines, which is also a very niche category in the wine world that people don't know too much about. When you were going through the process with, let's talk about like, you know, getting your new lease, the change of ownership with the health department, your application for your Type 41 beer and wine license, did you do this all on your own? Did you have anyone helping you with the lease?
The amount of stuff that David did.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Like
I say the same thing on her side too.
Yeah.
Paperwork side, and I did all the grunt work side.
Yeah, so we love doing things the hard way.
Not anymore.
I know.
We're going to overfund, and we're going to make it the sexiest restaurant ever. You know,
yeah, very smart. I did the same thing in 2009, and after the last economic kind of downturn, and I scooped up this space that I was, you know, built by the landlord, never used, and I did everything on my own, and I made a million mistakes. You know what I mean? But they were all. They're all gems that I take with me moving forward. That same goes for the jobs that Patrick and I do. Each deal is different. Each client's different. It's not like selling a house on main, you know, a house on in a neighborhood. There's just so many nuances, as you guys know. So the big question then, moving forward for location 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, would you guys recommend for yourselves, or would you use or recommend to others? Do you think it is beneficial to use a broker to help you get through these, you know, different stages of buying a restaurant, selling a restaurant, and, you know, getting the lease set up and so on?
Yeah, absolutely.
There are two things that I will say to that. I say absolutely. I think having somebody representing you is useful when it comes time to going to the negotiation table, because there's always that buffer. If you don't have that buffer between you and the host broker, or the, I don't know what real estate terms you guys use, but the, on the other side that's representing the landlord, it becomes really easy for them to reject your terms and your offers. Having somebody that creates 2 degrees of separation between you and the actual landlord is having those people. And that's a lot of fingers that are you're able to point in any direction and say, hey, like, no, let's keep going back to the negotiating table.
We want to be the bad guy for you. I mean, and that, it comes up so many times. We also want to be the good guy, but we want to, you know, filter that stuff out because a lot of stuff can cause stress to you guys, and you as the restaurateur have enough on your plate.
We do all the absorbing of all the bad negative feelings.
I will also say for everybody out there listening to that, brokers will always tell you that somebody else is interested, even if there isn't anybody else interested. I don't do that.
I'm very transparent. And if, you know, I try to, I do pride myself on being transparent. Yeah, no, seriously. I'm not a big on that because if you don't have someone who has an offer, then you're going to get called on your bluff. You'll look really bad. So I try not to get myself caught up in that kind of like thinking.
Yeah, there is one very large company in San Francisco that does that. I won't name any names.
Nor will we. We won't name that either.
With Raven? I don't know.
My lips are sealed. My lips are sealed, David. Yeah, I know it is. And a lot of the leasing agent that's working with the landlord, if they're on both, trying to say they're on both sides of it, you know, it's hard to have your best interests at you. The restaurateur's best interest at heart. And, you know, the goal being an ex-restaurateur, Patrick being an ex-restaurateur, we've walked in your shoes. We absolutely know the pains, the struggles, and so on. So we want to kind of debunk the myth about what our role is and really let people know that, you know, we are on your side. If someone doesn't know a restaurant to speak the language, to know the bones, run one before, it's really hard to put that into words or pass on the sentiment of how hard it is. So we got your back. We promise.
Want to get on to the...
Let's do it.
Yeah. So why don't you guys tell us what Trash Pie is exactly?
Yeah. So everything on our menu highlights upcycled ingredients in some way. So Trash Pie is just our way of talking about our very good pizzas using upcycled ingredients.
We're not dumpster diving.
Yeah.
So the word upcycle is so key, and it's also a term that I would say the average Joe doesn't use or maybe is not aware of. Can you expand on it a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just take the pizzas, just like that, first and foremost, not even talking about all the rest of the small plates. Our pizzas, before you even start putting any toppings on, they already do more for the planet than any other pizza out there. We utilize spent oats from the oat milk making process that gets milled down into a flour that companies like Oatly and all the stuff that you put in your lattes in the morning, all that's left over. That gets milled down, dehydrated, and thrown into a flour, and we incorporate that into our dough. We also utilize whey from the cheese making process instead of water.
Wow.
And so our dough, when you eat it, it's like this, like, crispy, like it's like this texturally just like very, like it's like a thin, very New York style grandma, like super thin style pizza. It's a Frankenstein of a lot of different things, but it is like very uniquely ours. And it's because of all the protein content from the spent oats and from the whey from the cheese making process.
I can vouch for Chef David on that. The pizza crust is fantastic at Shuggy's Trash Pie. It's great. Please try it if you're local or visiting. It's fantastic. That's a great example. Is this in any way similar to like repurposing the barley from, you know, some beer makers will use it as to moving on, or the koji or used rice from sake making, they use it in candy and other things. Is this similar?
Yeah, it's absolutely doing that, but doing that on every single menu item throughout the entire menu. So we talk to different manufacturers, we talk to different farmers. We have chocolate folks that are, you know, giving us nibs and chocolate that may have like malformed during like when they make their beautiful little truffles. They have like stuff that maybe is like tweaked itself during like the heating process or something. And we just take all those things, whether it's an ugly vegetable, whether it's a fish belly, whether it's, you know, dried mushrooms from, we have this one mushroom partner. We take all these different things and those, we combine all that stuff, create really tasty things that all look beautiful, that all taste great, but they do something really great for the planet. And it's really simple. And it's just returning back to a way that we should have been working.
I read that you guys use squash that isn't even deformed in any way. They just had too much of it because of some, for whatever reason. And so you're utilizing that. It's not even that it's bad looking or anything like that. That was bizarre. I couldn't believe I read that.
Can we also talk about the genius of, you know, that they've dug in so deep on this, you know, mission that I mean, it has to help you on some levels from a business standpoint because of cost of the goods, your food cost of goods, and so on. Does it help you in certain ways? I know how hard it is, how margins are. So
there's very rarely a time where we pay less than what market value is for all these things. And the reason for that is because we want to help the farmers. That's first and foremost how we got into this particular mission. But it's because, like, I've known these farmers for like 16 years.
Wow.
Kayla's known these people for a very long time. These folks have families. I've seen little kids grow up at the farmer's market. I've seen people grow old at this farmer's market. And, you know, when you have that type of human connection, that type of community, you are like forcing these people sometimes to like, take my money. Like, they don't want to charge you a lot of times for this stuff, or they want to charge you very little. So you're just like, no, take it. It's like, that was our whole goal. The other side to that is that sometimes, and what happens is a lot of times, there is added labor. There's just extra labor that comes down to the stuff. So I would say, honestly, we're probably even with any other restaurant. Pizza does give us a good margin, but the upcycled stuff, that tends to not necessarily impact bottom line.
That makes sense. But you know what? You've really completed the circle of compassion here and business. So that's really sweet of you guys that you guys keep that focus. Everybody can look at it from a capitalistic standpoint, and you guys keep your hearts in it too. So that's great. Congratulations on that. PT, where are we at? What do you think?
Let's see here. Did you guys have any role models, or how did you kind of get on this whole line of sustainability? Who taught
Kayla
you earlier?
Kayla's my role model for sustainability.
She's my role model.
Me too.
I'm going to add a little thing from her parents. Her parents and her like family in general, they were always like kind of like scared of Kayla. Her auntie specifically was always like, oh, Kayla's coming over. Make sure that all pass it sorted correctly. Don't do that. Kayla's coming. Don't do that. Like, make sure you compost that. Kayla's coming. That kind of thing. She's been like that since she was like in elementary school, which is kind of a crazy
thing. Saw a video of my wife that her mom shared with me. She was like 9 years old talking about like compost, recycling, you know, trash and splitting up everything. I was like 12 then. And I'm like, I don't think I was thinking about those things back then.
No, run through the body, buddy.
Wow. See these very dedicated folks that, you know, like I just said, got back from Lightning in a Bottle working there with my partner. And, you know, she also does outside lands and as food curation there and stuff. But like the trash team, the compost team, the recycling team, the dedication and the calmness and for them to like pick up the slack for everyone else. I feel like there's parallels. You guys are picking up the slack for other restaurants here and trying to set this really great example of what we should be doing. And, you know, how do you get people enthusiastic about it? I mean, you got your restaurant so lively and loud and fun and stuff. So it draws people in, but how do you keep people enthusiastic about this? And where do you go from here to really, you know, push on sustainability and upcycling?
Yeah. You know, I think in a lot of ways we have to be exciting and fun because it's a really not fun topic. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to bring a little bit of levity to it and excitement. And, you know, the second part of that, we are actively trying to figure out what that looks like for the future too, because we are subject to all the same difficulties that restaurants in the Bay Area are facing right now. Like, there are not enough people out. Things are expensive. We have a million different expenses specific to the Bay Area. And, you know, we're trying to develop sustainable systems for our farmers. But if we're not around, like, how does that continue?
Yeah, that's amazing. That scalability, looking for that scalability on how to really like make it an impactful thing, that a habit that lasts, right?
And I think we're trying to do that on like a small scale with the individual too. Like, we're trying to build sustainable habits with our guests and try to like push them gently towards better ways of eating or even just thinking about use and consumption in their own lives. But, you know, we're grappling with the same thing in really as a business, and we're figuring it out still.
It's hard to like find that balance of keeping hospitality first with your guests and not being preachy and being that smiling face that gently lets them know what you're about and what maybe the right thing to do is, or guiding them and you're pushing them in a little bit of a way. That's a fine line. You guys are doing better than anybody I've seen do it. So again, kudos on that. That's hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I take a detour here? Can you tell me the state of the mission right now? You know, I've talked to clients and I've heard, you know, their thoughts and feedback. Tell us a little bit about the mission neighborhood as of right now.
Yeah. You know, the That's tough because there's so much that's wrapped into politics and systemic issues that are just plaguing the neighborhood, really. I mean, the mission, you don't go down the mission thinking that you're getting the most spick and span spot. You don't go down thinking that it's going to be like the most sexy place to be in San Francisco, of course. But there's just been a lot of mismanagement, I think, by the city. What they've done on Valencia is
with the bike lanes and parking.
It's not just the bike lane, right? If you put the bike lane in and you left street parking that was non-commercial, I think it'd be a lot. We're actually going to a meeting after this about this specific thing. If you left the parking and you kept that bike lane, I think it would not have hurt any of those businesses that are there. And I think we even have felt a little bit of it. Not as much as those.
Sure. I feel like they're in cahoots with ride sharing and the Uber Eats and DoorDashes to make it more convenient for that. And because if you're on Valencia, there's a lot of these white spaces that are for like quick pickups. And it's taken away all the parking for people who want to come down there. And I just do wonder if there's some lobbying going on with some of those ride sharing companies to...
I mean, you know, whatever they're doing, it has been very unfortunate. And I think we're going to see a real downturn. And we've already seen a real downturn, a very hyper-local economy right there in the Mission. Sure. And I mean, if you would ask me when we were looking at Shuggie's, if we wanted to be on Valencia, I would have said yes. If you asked me now, I would tell you I wouldn't touch it with a 20-foot pole. There are other parts in the Mission that I would go. But I mean, the thing is that we get hit with graffiti constantly. And then the city comes after us about graffiti. And, you know, there's just like all these different scenarios. I would totally open up another restaurant in the Mission. It would have to be a very specific type of part of the Mission. I won't tell you what that is because I don't want y'all to go get it.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, and just for the broader listeners here, you know, in San Francisco, Mission District has historically been Latino-based, you know, culture, but it has just evolved into a very diverse, colorful, lively, loud, and one of the best food neighborhoods that have ever existed in San Francisco. So it's hard to see the effects, you know, stemming from politics, pandemic, and a handful of other things, the effect on it. Now, let's not discourage folks, though. Go there. There's like such good diversity of restaurants and people and fun.
Absolutely.
And you better go to Shuggie's and have some trash pie for sure.
I gave you guys the wrong answer. It's great.
Oh, we appreciate you. We appreciate you. You know, there's so much that faces restaurateurs, and that's honestly probably what we're going to be talking 75% of on our podcast. So honesty is paramount. We love what you guys do. We got a secret question for you. It's not like, you know, are you a tidy whitey or boxer brief guy? You know, David, I could guess what you are, but I'm not going to say it live.
You don't want to guess.
I know. We're keeping this PG-13. All right. Our secret question today. What would you do if you had to work but didn't need the money? I think it might be easy for Kayla.
Yeah, I think it might be easy.
Maybe both of you.
I think it's probably easy for both of us.
Yeah.
For me, I'll just jump in. I think probably for Kayla too, we're both like very passionate about creating spaces. Creating spaces that people can enjoy. Like, I mean, truly similar to what we do now, except maybe less of the day-to-day operation. In creating spaces that mean something from an artistic perspective, that also means something that can really impact like what we do as a society, right? And it sounds like lofty, and it sounds maybe a bit more grandiose than what it is to be walking into Shuggie's, but that truly is why we built Shuggie's, is to hopefully drive home that there is a planet that is still worth saving. But doing that through design and through art and through sculpture is what I would specifically do.
Yeah. No, same. I mean, we have this conversation a lot, and we are really, I mean, we're so invested in building spaces that people enjoy, and also thinking towards the future. Like, how are we doing that in a way where we're not like burning as a species on this planet? And there is kind of a happy medium there, and we don't have all the answers, but I think there's a lot of really interesting, beautiful, fun ways to engage with those topics. Yeah, building spaces.
If I could give you guys an unlimited budget to do all those things, I would, because you are the right folks for the job. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, we are looking for investment. Tell everybody out there.
There we go. Shuggie's too. We're looking for investors. Patrick will tell you where to reach us on the outro, but do you two want to say anything about where to find you, what to do, when to come in? I don't know. Self-plugging?
Yeah. We're open Tuesday through Sunday, open at 5 all those days. But yeah, come by. We're in the Mission on 23rd and Bartlett. We are there pretty much all those days that we're open.
Hopefully
sometimes not on Sunday. Yeah, come by. Say hi.
Instagrams, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Follow them on Instagram. You get to see some of these crazy great events. I mean, I was watching your crawfish event. I mean, good Lord, all the fun things that you do. It's unique. It's diverse. It's fun. So keep an eye on these two, okay? We really thank you for coming on with us today. You are a fun couple, and I really admire what you do and the reason you do it. So that's all I can say about you guys. It's words don't give you justice. So I want to see what the future holds for you guys, and it'll be great, I'm sure.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, really appreciate it. It's a fun side of the business to talk about.
Yeah, well, appreciate it. So
we haven't seen Patrick in a long time.
I know.
We saw you just a couple months ago, but it's good seeing you guys.
I'm due for a trip in there. Me and the wife will come for sure.
I'll let you know. Tanya and I are going to be having some fun without the kids this weekend, and we'll swing by and say hi on Saturday probably.
Awesome. Cool.
Right on, guys.
Cool. Right
thank
on.
You so, very much. And good
thank
luck
you
on
both.
The podcast. Everybody out there listening.
Totally. Thank you so much. So next episode, you guys, this affects you guys too. So let me plug our next episode here. Our next episode, SB478. What's that, you ask? On July 1st, SB478 will take effect in California. Restaurants in California will no longer be able to add service charges or other charges to your checks. The ramifications of this are long and complicated, and we're going to be delving into the polarizing topic with Jordan Reese-Cohen. He's the managing attorney of Brick and Mortar Legal in San Francisco. He's my and Patrick's and many other agents in our brokerage. He's our go-to when it comes to restaurant-related lease issues, ABC questions, and other restaurant-related legal questions. He's got a lot of things to say about it. This is a polarizing subject for him. I've already talked to him about it. It's going to be a heated one. We hope you sign in or log in and listen to us. Episode 3.
If you enjoyed today's show and don't want to worry about missing an episode, you can follow the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you found today's episode interesting or useful, please share it with someone you think would benefit and consider leaving a rating and review.
Reviews help restaurant owners or buyers just like you discover this podcast and benefit from the important topics covered in the episodes. Your opinion matters to us as a listener, so feel free to leave topic suggestions and feedback for us as we will use these to tailor the episodes to you and help you get the most out of listening. Visit www.therestaurantsalesbroker.com/podcast for step-by-step instructions on how to follow, rate, and review.
Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Restaurant Deal Making Exposed. If you're considering selling your business and would like a free consultation, reach out to Patrick and Andy at therestaurantsalesbroker.com or visit www.therestaurantsalesbroker.com to learn more.